All right, welcome to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation Captain's Chair event. I am your host, Charlie, and I'm here with Captain Paul Watson and Captain Lockie. Today, we are going to speak about Operation PIACON, and we're also going to go over the future of the foundation. During this event, if you would like to ask a question, you can do so within Zoom. So if you look at the Q&A at the bottom of your screen, you can type in a question. We might not get to all of the questions, but please do go ahead and ask one, and hopefully we'll get a chance to ask it. Captain Paul and Captain Lockie, how are you both doing today?
Wonderful, thank you.
That's great.
Hey, Charlie, thanks for having us.
My pleasure. So how did the two of you meet?
Go ahead, Lockie.
I wonder if Paul remembers. He's had so many crew over the years. I was actually in university, and this was before internet and email. And I remember trying to fax the head office at the time, and I just sort of fax bombed the office until somebody replied to me. And eventually, somebody in the office told me the ship was in Fort Pierce, Florida, and that if I could get on board by a certain date, that I could crew. So I just sort of packed my bags and made my way to the ship.
Yeah, and he joined as a ship's cook, actually, even though he's more of a captain than a cook. Well, that's not to say he's not a good cook.
So Lockie, moving on from your cooking days, what is your role currently with the Captain Paul Watson Foundation?
Currently, I'm the ship operations director, campaigns director for the foundation, and that basically means that I'm overseeing what happens here on the vessel, making sure the ship's ready for campaign, seaworthy, that we've got all the boxes ticked so that we can and head out to sea and be ready in time for, in this case, Operation PIACON this summer.
So Paul, can you tell us a little bit about Operation PIACON?
Well, I got the name. I was inspired by Avatar, The Way of Water, and the whale in there, the hero whale in the film, is named PIACON. But I couldn't get hold of James Cameron to get permission to use that character's name. But my late friend, Chief Paulino PIACON of the Amazon, I thought, well, this is an opportunity to honor Chief PIACON. And so I would call it with the spelling of his name. But it was really inspired by the character in Avatar. But the object of the campaign is to save endangered fin whales in the waters between Iceland and Greenland. The killing of whales, especially fin whales, is illegal. There's a commercial moratorium on whaling worldwide, and Christian Lawson is the whaler in Iceland who's blatantly violating that law. So we're also dealing with an endangered species. So we have every right to go and protect those whales from this renegade sort of Captain Ahab character, Christian Lofsen.
So Lockie, when you and I talked in a podcast episode a while back, you had mentioned the route that the whale meat has to take to get to the market in Japan. Could you explain that to our audience a little bit?
Sure. Japan claims that they have this traditional whaling industry, which of course makes no sense if they're going all the way down to places like Antarctica to catch their whales. Iceland has a similar situation in that they're catching these fin whales in their coastal waters in the North Atlantic, as Paul mentioned, between Iceland and Greenland. But very little of the whale meat actually stays in Iceland. Most of this whale meat, once it's been towed to port, once it's been hauled up onto the slipways, on shore there in Iceland, everything is boxed, butchered, frozen, and packed. And basically, from that point on, everything's containerized and sent to Japan. We were talking a bit about this on the podcast, Charlie, that Iceland goes to great lengths to send this whale meat to Japan on icebreakers. And basically, they're actually escorted over the Northeast Passage over Russia to Japan from Iceland, escorted by nuclear icebreakers. And this is actually in order to get around all kinds of CITES regulations, because ports such as Rotterdam, Cape Town, and other ports around the world have banned this whale meat from from being transshipped through their harbors.
So Lockie, what preparations are underway to get the Jean-Paul DeJoria II ready for Operation PyCon?
Well, we've been the crew have been working so hard, Charlie. We started work in earnest around the beginning of the year, but we've been welding, replating. We've had tanks inspected. We've had all of our sea chests and valves replaced. We're currently undergoing a major engine overhaul. There's pipework happening. There's a crane being installed. So we have an amazing crew, and we'd be nowhere without them. And we're now ticking down to sort of a 6-week time period where we can basically get everything ready over the next 6 weeks in order to get to New York on time and get to Iceland on time. So a lot of work happening at the same time here. Lots of different crews, lots of sparks flying everywhere. It's quite exciting.
That's great. So, Paul, how long has it been since you were on a ship confronting whalers on the high seas?
Well, the last time was in 2013, and then Japan issued a red notice on me, which has been made it difficult for me to travel. An Interpol red notice is usually for war criminals, major drug traffickers, serial killers. I'm the only person in the history of Interpol to be put on there for trespassing. But Japan's a powerful nation, and so they put that Interpol notice out. The U.S. didn't respect it. France didn't respect it. But it's an unpredictable thing, so I could be detained at any time. Canada, for example, has said if I cross the border into my own country that they would send me to Japan. So we're working to have it removed. But, you know, the Japanese government was they're very vindictive about, you know, the fact that we shut down their whaling operations in the Southern Ocean.
So, Paul, a follow-up question is, what sort of lessons have you learned from previous organizations that you've been a part of that might help take direct action to the next level and might be more effective in the future?
Well, some of the mistakes we made is putting too much reliance on board members who were there on the board because they were contributors and turned out to do a hostile takeover and completely change the direction of what Sea Shepherd is all about, actually throwing me out of my what I created and after 45 years. So I would tell people to be very, very wary of whoever's on your board.
Fair enough. That is good advice. And so the foundation's purpose is really to push forward direct action. And that's something that you're looking forward to in Iceland, I take it.
Well, really, the purpose of the foundation is to carry on doing the work that I've been doing for the last 45 years. I know it sounds a little egotistical calling it the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, but I really had no choice because I wasn't allowed to use Sea Shepherd. I wasn't allowed to use the logos. So I thought I would be safe of setting it up in my own name. But now I'm being sued by Sea Shepherd. They're claiming that I don't even have the right to use my own name because it causes confusion amongst, according to the papers, confusion amongst their supporters because my name's so intimately connected with Sea Shepherd. And that therefore is causing irreparable damage to their what they call their brand. So they're challenging me on using my own name. But, we're carrying on here. We're focusing on the positive side of this. Get a ship out there, do this campaign, build up, be ready for the Japanese when they return to the Southern Ocean, possibly in 2024. We know they're going to do that, and we want to be ready for them.
So this next question is both of you can answer, but I'll start with Lockie. And Lockie, what is your opinion of the state of the conservation movement globally? Are you encouraged by what you're seeing, or are you discouraged?
Actually, I was talking to one of our crew the other day, it's one of those things where you can't not be encouraged. You can't be pessimistic. You can't be negative about these things. I don't think we've ever faced anything like what we're facing today. But at the same time, environmental causes have never been so mainstream. Paul's been talking a little bit about this. The downside of becoming mainstream is the tendency for things to become comfortable. And then easily digestible by consumers. And I think the key to being effective and the key to, you know, good conservation is to be able to stay nimble and not necessarily always mainstream and also not necessarily comfortable.
And I don't get pessimistic or depressed about any of this because, you know, we have no power over the future. We can't predict or control the future. What we can do is control what we do in the present. And the present defines what the future will be. So all our energies really have to be focused on actions in the present that will define what the future will be.
So, Paul, this next question is for you. You have mentioned in the past Professor Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. And my question for you is, in the social media age, how have you taken the teachings of Professor McLuhan into today's world, and how are you applying them for the foundation?
Well, what McLuhan said back many years ago is that the medium is more important than the message. So we really have to understand all these mediums. For instance, when we had the film Seaspiracy, the reason it was so effective is because it was on Netflix. And if it had, you know, if it had been just put out there, nobody would have seen it. So we try to get the best media coverage. When we did Whale Wars, we got Animal Planet on board, Discovery on board. And so it's really important to try and get the best media outlet to get your story across. I've always said that the most important weapon is the camera. And if it isn't on camera, well, it didn't actually happen. So we have to be very, very careful about documenting everything we do. But we also have to be careful to not allow the documentation to be the sole thing that we're doing. We're not there to, you know, I like David Attenborough, but we're not out there to make a David Attenborough film. We're out there to do things and to change things and document what we're doing.
And so follow-up question for Lockie then is, Lockie, what are the ship operations doing to utilize social media? And I say that having seen recently the time-lapse video that you all did that was excellent. So, you know, how are you incorporating that into the ship operations?
Well, I think being able to share all the hard work that goes into these vessels and all the hard work that goes into preparing for these campaigns, it's a great way for supporters, for donors to stay involved, stay informed, see where the donations are going, see how much hard work's going into getting these campaigns off the ground. It's not an easy task, and social media has been a great ally insofar as being able to share footage such as the time lapse. Our crew member here, Otis, who's our media manager on board the ship, he's had a very painstaking couple of weeks because he's been setting up these GoPros all around the shipyard. And actually, they kept getting bent over and turned off by you know, workers in the shipyard and that kind of stuff. So eventually, he was getting very frustrated. So even the job of the media on board is not always easy. But again, it's a great way for our supporters and donors to stay informed, and it's also a great way for the crew, who I like to think are very proud of what they're doing here, to be able to share that as well with friends and family.
And as a follow-up to that, Lockie, when Operation PyCon happens, is social media going to be a big part of what you all do during the campaign?
Well, Paul's been, as Paul said earlier, some of our missions have relied so heavily on being able to tell our side of the story. In Antarctica, that was evident against Japanese whaling, where they would be putting out their version of events. And fortunately, we were able on board our ships, like the Steve Irwin, to be able to release our side of the story and footage from our media team. And those were the early days of social media. But nowadays, it's more important than ever to be able to document what you're doing. There'll definitely be more than one side to a story. That's always the case in media. And we have to be sure that we're ready and prepared and can document actions as they happen.
Okay, so Paul, what is your long-term vision for the Captain Paul Watson Foundation?
My long-term vision is to do everything we can to protect whales and dolphins, sharks, sea turtles. In other words, to protect life and diversity in the ocean, and focusing primarily on illegal activities. You know, recently we had this high seas treaty that was passed by the United Nations, and it all looks very good on paper, but without enforcement, it's absolutely meaningless. So the laws are out there, the treaties are out there, and I see our job is going in there and enforcing those treaties. And we can do so by virtue of the United Nations World Charter for Nature, which allows for non-government organizations and even individuals to uphold international conservation law, especially outside of territorial limits. So that's really what we're doing, is policing those treaties and those laws where there's a lack of economic and political motivation on the part of governments to get involved.
And Lockie, from your point of view too, what's your, I guess, vision going forward into the future for the foundation?
There's no time like today as far as saving the oceans. And as Paul said, we've got this high seas treaty. It was on the table for three decades or more. All these countries had to be able to agree. So that meant compromising and whittling away possibly the original intent of what the treaty was drafted up to do. Even if a treaty is signed, it has to be ratified by over 100 countries. And meanwhile, you still need boots on the ground. You still need sentinels out there patrolling the seas and catching out all the illegal activity that's happening whilst treaties are happening, cocktail parties are happening with meetings where politicians are signing, potential ocean protection pacts, et cetera. So there's no time like now to be out there patrolling the high seas and protecting the oceans.
Okay, so now we're gonna phase into the question and answer portion of this event. So I have a list of questions here, and I'm just going to run through them. Paul or Lockie, feel free to jump in. Either one of you can answer these. So the very first question is Sea Shepherd Brazil supporting the Captain Paul Watson Foundation?
There are Sea Shepherd groups that are supporting the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, specifically Sea Shepherd France, Sea Shepherd UK, Sea Shepherd Brazil, Sea Shepherd Hungary, also Tahiti and New Caledonia. So they're supporting what we're doing, but they're also paying the price for supporting what they're doing. Sea Shepherd Global is now suing Sea Shepherd France, trying to say they have no right to use the logo or the name, and they're using, you know, their donors' money to do that. Sea Shepherd USA is suing France and also myself, saying I have no right to use my name. It's a very difficult situation because they have the donor base to use those kind of funds. People are donating to our campaigns with Sea Shepherd. They're using them to sue other Sea Shepherd groups, and it's really quite bizarre. And I don't really understand why they're doing it. But it's really a power grab, and a complete refocus of what Sea Shepherd was all about. Back in June of 2022, I was told that Sea Shepherd was going to pursue a different direction. They're not going to be controversial. They're not going to be confrontational. They're going to work with governments. They're going to work with corporations. And I said, well, I can't support that. So that's why I was ousted. One of the things that I was really upset about is the fact that Sea Shepherd Australia is in partnership with a company called Austral Fisheries, which is a fishing company, and not just any fishing company, but a fishing company that's 50% owned by the Japanese fishing company, Maruha Dachiro. And that particular company used to own whaling ships. And one of the whaling ships that it owned was the Sierra, the vessel that I hunted down in 1979 and ended its career. So it's a real slap in the face that Sea Shepherd Australia is partnering with a company that once owned the Sierra. And it's really a bad way to go. I don't understand why they're going this way, because being committed to a partnership with governments and corporations, that was never what Sea Shepherd was about. So what we will be doing is continuing to do what Sea Shepherd has always done. And just this week, Sea Shepherd of France shut down the killing of dolphins by the French trawler fleet. And it was a major achievement. You know, it was 3 years ago that I advised Lamia Samlamia of Sea Shepherd France. I said, this is out of sight, out of mind. Let's get those dead dolphins, those corpses which are lying on the beaches. Put them in front of the Eiffel Tower, put them on the steps of the National Assembly, put them on the steps of the European Parliament, because killing dolphins by French fishing vessels is illegal under both French law and under EU law. But people have to know about it. They have to react. And they finally did. And it was a victory. At the same time that Sea Shepherd France got this victory, they're being sued by Sea Shepherd Global and saying you have no right to use the name or the logos that I designed and that I created.
So, second question, what is the International Whaling Commission doing to protect whales around Iceland?
Well, the International Whaling Commission is doing nothing except that they declared a global moratorium on commercial whaling. And it's like also Japanese whaling has been condemned by the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Those condemnations are out there, but these countries just ignore the international law and just go about doing what they're doing. In the case of Iceland, I would say that the majority of Icelanders are against whaling. I think the Icelandic government is against whaling, but it's one man, this sort of Captain Ahab character is in his early 80s who wants to kill whales. And he said he'll continue to kill whales for as long as he can sell them. And he's also one of the wealthiest men in Iceland, has a lot of clout with the Icelandic government. Iceland has said that they're going to, you know, not renew his permits in 2024, but they haven't confirmed that. And he insists that he will continue doing that. So I'm hoping that this campaign will, convince Iceland that they really have to stop this nonsense. It's illegal and it's giving Iceland a very, very bad name. Even the majority of Icelanders are against it.
Okay, so question three is actually for me. Someone asked how they can listen to the podcast that was mentioned. You can find it on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. If you just search for the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast, you will find our podcast. So there's the answer to that one. All right, so the next question is how can I volunteer with the Captain Paul Watson Foundation? And Lockie, I'll let you take that one.
Thanks, Charlie. There's, I guess, two streams to that. If someone's volunteering on land or wanting to volunteer on land, there's a channel they can follow on the paulwatsonfoundation.org website. Certain chapters have been set up, from my understanding, and there are other places around the world that don't yet have a chapter. And so I think the best way, as far as that goes, is to contact the website and follow that link if you're wanting to volunteer on land. If you're wanting to volunteer at sea on the ship, we do get some excellent volunteers. We get excellent crew applications coming in. It's been really heartwarming to see how much interest has been out there to crew on the ships. And that's an easy one. People can email crewing@Neptune's Navy, or they can also click the link on the website in order to crew on board. And they'll be asked to fill a form with some of their experience. But we've got crew on board this ship at the moment, 16 or 17 crew at the moment, from around the world, Canada, Sweden, Malaysia, France, and many of them actually have never been to sea before. It's their first time on a ship, and it's just wonderful. Hard work that they're doing. We wouldn't be able to be in and out of dry dock and out of port here in the next couple of weeks without them.
All right, so the next question is, will there be a TV show for this campaign? And if so, how do I watch it?
We will be filming everything that happens on the campaign, and we're in negotiations right now with production companies to recreate what we had when we had Whale Wars. I think there's a lot of interest there, and I'm quite confident that we will be able to produce a TV show beginning with this campaign.
All right. So the next question is, how can a supporter help from Germany? Is there a CPWF chapter in Germany?
We don't yet have a chapter in Germany. We were hoping that Sea Shepherd Germany would support us, but it looks like that's not happening. So that's one of the things that we'll be working on.
All right. So the next question, Paul, is, will Paul be on the ship?
Yes, I'll be on the ship, and Lockie will captain the vessel, and we'll work together to do what we can to protect those whales. Somebody who actually said to me, if Iceland's going to not renew the permit next year, then why are you going? I said, well, we can't confirm that, but also up to 200 whales could be killed. 200 whales deserve being protected. And, these are incredible creatures. They're endangered, and it's against the law to kill them. So that's what we're responding to. And we're hoping that that will help to not renew Lofsen's permits next year. I should say that back in 2019, I sent our vessel, the Bridge of Bardot, to Iceland in a similar situation. And when it arrived, Iceland canceled their whaling season. So that was a really effective campaign where there was really no confrontation. We just showed up and they stopped. Now that could happen again this year. We hope so, but you never know.
All right. So this next question is for Lockie, because Lockie, I know you have some experience removing plastics in the ocean. And so someone has asked, will the foundation do anything to remove plastics from the ocean?
That's an interesting one. We aren't sort of gearing any campaigns directly towards plastic removal at the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. There are so many there's so much marine life that needs to be saved. There's so much just the whales. It's in 2023. There are countries out there like Norway, Japan, and Iceland. They're still whaling. So we have a lot of work to do here. However, Captain Paul and I have been involved in clearing places that are sensitive areas, such as Cocos Island. A couple of years ago, where 34 tons of long lines were removed, and that is plastic. So when we're talking about fishing gear, when we're talking about long lining, when we're talking about protecting sharks in places like the Eastern Tropical Pacific, then it's possible that we might be involved in the future in plastic removal on the oceans.
And we're also involved with in a partnership with Parley for the Oceans, which in fact specifically addresses that very thing. They're collecting plastic all around the world, and so we're working with them.
Okay. So the next question is about Iceland, and this person wonders if Iceland is preparing to send military ships to interfere with our efforts to stop whaling.
We are not going to be going into Iceland's legal territorial waters. We're operating out in the international waters against vessels that are going far out to sea to try and kill these whales. So we're not going to be doing anything illegal. We're opposing illegal activities. So I don't really see how Iceland would have any jurisdiction or have any reason to intervene against us. So we'll see how it goes. You never know with governments, you know, they're unpredictable. So we'll see what happens. But the important thing is that we go there and we make every effort to protect those whales, and we will do so.
Okay. So the next question is, many people don't know about the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. This person asks, what can they do to help spread the word?
You know what? To make the Captain Paul Watson Foundation as secure as possible, we need people to sign up to be monthly donors. I mean, that could be a monthly donor at $5, $10, or any amount, really. But that actually secures the organization. So that means that we know how much money we have to work with every month, you know, to maintain the vessel and the campaigns. So, you know, when I was with Sea Shepherd, we built up this big monthly donor program. And so we have to do that again with the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. I don't have access to the donor list for Sea Shepherd. But, you know, people who hear about what we're doing and come over to support us, we certainly welcome that. And fortunately, we got some really good people who we worked with when I was with Sea Shepherd, who have come up and said, you know, I'm here to help you. For instance, in September, I got a call from Jean-Paul DeJoria, who's a, you know, major businessman and Patron Tequila, Paul Mitchell Shampoo, and that. And he said, what happened to the ship that I sponsored with Sea Shepherd? And I said, I think that they scrapped your ship, Jean-Paul. And he said, why? I said, I don't know. So he called them up, and he was told that, the ship was getting old, which wasn't the case, and we decided to scrap it. But he said, so Jean-Paul said, well, why didn't you just give it to Paul Watson? And he was told, well, we offered it to him, but he declined. And I said, that is absolutely not true. They never did any such thing. And so he said, find me a ship, I'll buy it. And that's how we got the Jean-Paul DeJoria too. And so if not for Jean-Paul DeJoria, we would be in a difficult situation. But, you know, he answered the call, and we're in the place where we are right now because of him.
Okay, so this question sort of dovetails on that other question. And Lockie, why don't you take a shot at this one? They're asking, if we were to get a second ship, would you rather have a fast interceptor vessel or another large ship?
That's a good question. And my answer to that, and I think Paul would agree with me on this one, is that we would want a fast, larger ship. So a vessel that can fulfill all the duties that an interceptor would fulfill. And you know, Charlie, I'm familiar with that type of ship. I took the Brigitte Bardot down to Antarctica. Working with Paul, we were able to find the Nishin Maru, the whale factory ship, as well as the Sun Laurel, the refueling ship. We were able to slow down and stop in the water one of the Harpoon ships. So those interceptor vessels are very, very effective. We basically need enough speed to keep up and keep on par with these harpooners when we're going on a anti-whaling campaign. And the magic number, seems to be above 20 knots. And that seems to be, what some of these harpoon ships can do. And Japan is currently building a new factory ship. So they're building a new whaling vessel to be a factory processing ship. And that ship's going to be online within the next year or two. So I believe that a second ship is necessary, and Paul's already got us looking for one. And they're hard to find on the secondhand market. They're out there, they do exist, but they're not always easy to find. But yeah, something that can keep up with a modern Japanese whaling factory ship, and something that has the range, the speed, and the size to be able to sail in heavy weather for let's say 30 to 50 days at a time. So there's a lot of requirements, which makes the pool of vessels very small.
I should point out, though, that the John Paul de Jory is fully capable of matching the speed of the Icelandic whalers and has the range and the strength. So it's ideal for this summer's campaign. Looking forward into the future and going after the Japanese, we have to really look for a better vessel. But I think that both vessels will be able to work in partnership in going after the Japanese whaling fleet.
Okay. So the next question is, are there any plans to go back to the Faroe Islands?
Well, we've never left the Faroe Islands. And, Sea Shepherd Global and Sea Shepherd USA didn't want anything to do with the Faroes campaign. But Sea Shepherd United Kingdom has been doing that campaign every single year. And they're doing it right now. And we're in partnership with Sea Shepherd United Kingdom. And so, yes, and there is a possibility that we would take a vessel to the Faroe Islands and even to Norway, which is also killing whales. But the Faroes campaign has been ongoing.
So, Paul, the next question is, someone asked, how do you stay so calm with all the turmoil around you?
Well, I've been doing this for a long time, I guess. So that is probably the reason why. But also, as I said before, you got to focus on what you're doing in the present. And, and as we say on the ship all the time, if it isn't something, well, it's something else, but it's always something. So you have to be prepared for pretty much everything and just deal with it as it comes to you and carry on.
So, Lockie, this next question is for you. This person's asking, how long will the campaign be for Operation Pyacon?
Well, as Paul was saying earlier, we don't know the status of when the whaling season will start or if the permit will be issued, but we intend to be there and be on the ground and be ready in any case, as we were back in 2019 when the Brigitte Bardot went up there. So it could be anywhere from 1 month to 3 months. It could last all summer. The key is to have a ship and have boots on the ground and be off the Icelandic waters to be able to meet any type of whaling activity should it arise, and should the whalers come out, should Christian Lawson decide to send his fleet out with a self-issued whaling permit, which is what Iceland has been doing all these years, is issuing themselves a whaling permit in contravention to the worldwide ban on whaling.
And also, we'll have a crew on the ground in Iceland, as we've had for the last few years. Sea Shepherd UK has had, a constant crew there monitoring what's happening at the whaling station and reporting out to us on the ship out at sea.
Okay, so another question that came in is, how can we get the postcode lottery to donate to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation?
Well, I don't know if that's possible because it's a Dutch lottery and they give €1 million a year to Sea Shepherd. But I don't think they're going to be very happy to know that some of the monies that they're donating is being used to sue other Sea Shepherd groups that, you know, are rebelling against this new change in direction. You know, if we set up a Captain Paul Watson Foundation in the Netherlands, and down the road that might be possible. But right now, you know, the situation is that Dutch postal code money is being used to sue Sea Shepherd.
So we have another question. It's actually one that I can answer. This person asks, will there be a logo for Operation PyCon? And I can say that yes, there will be. And we have received a lot of submissions from probably many of you that are listening today. So I wanted to thank those of you that are listening that have submitted logo suggestions for Operation PyCon. We are going to be going over those soon. And in the future, we'll be releasing a logo for the campaign. So you all can stay tuned for that. Paul and Lockie, I think that about concludes the question and answer portion of this event. Is there anything that either one of you two would like to add before we sign off today?
Well, what I would like to stress is the monthly donor program, and the more people we can recruit to that program, the stronger we'll be. So, you know, the United States Navy has taxpayers to support what it's doing, and we just need that monthly donor program because that will give us the security to carry on our operations month after month without having to worry about where that income is coming from. And so it doesn't really matter if people donate $5 or $10 or anything really, as long as it's a monthly thing, so we know that it's a guaranteed income.
All right. So I do have a couple announcements that I do need to make. And Lockie, was there anything that you wanted to say before I continue?
Well, I would just echo Paul's last comment, and you know, hear from the ship's perspective on board the vessel, where we can see those you know, donations sort of actually coming to life. We've got a crane that's just been installed on deck. Paul did a fundraiser on Facebook and was able to raise the much needed funds for that crane, and we can see those donations trickling in here in real life. So it's always heartwarming to know that you know, a certain component or a certain repair has been covered, you know, a critical spare part's been covered by a donor or a pledge. So if you haven't already become a donor, feel free to visit the website. And see where those donations are going. It's all coming here to the vessel to get ready for the campaign.
That's a really good point, is that as folks donate, they can watch the vessel get built out as you all release videos and such. So that is kind of exciting, I'm sure. So let me go ahead and make some of these announcements. One is to please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you haven't already, just look us up at the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. If you do go to the website at paulwatsonfoundation.org, you can sign up for our newsletter, and that is a great way to stay in touch with what is going on. And we will be doing another Captain's Chair event in about a month, so please do look out for that. You will see behind myself and Captain Watson, there is a text OCEAN to 801-801 to donate. That's an easy way to donate and to get involved. We also, if you'd like to take this to the next level, we have a crowdfunding opportunity. So if you go on our website, you can learn more about that. But what that enables you to do is you sign up with DonorBox, and then you're able to send emails to friends and family that appeals to them to help donate to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. So it really allows you to take your passion and share it with people that you love and people that care about you and that care about the ocean, to help raise more money. So it's a way for you to expand your net and to help us bring in more supporters. So please do keep that in mind. And then lastly, if you would like to support the foundation and have a shirt much like, or a hoodie much like Paul and Lockie are wearing today, you can go to shop.paulwatson.com. And there on our shop, you will find you know, t-shirts and hoodies and things like that if you'd like to wear that out and about, which certainly will help us spread awareness about the foundation and our upcoming campaigns. So with that, hey, Paul and Lockie, I want to thank you both very much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to doing more of these in the future.
Thanks, Charlie.
Charlie, thank you.
All right, and thank you to all our attendees. I really appreciate all of you joining us. And with that, I will sign off. Thanks so much, everybody.
If the oceans die, we die.